This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we get into this past this Memorial Day weekend, and happy Memorial Day for everybody who was able to celebrate it. You know, Memorial Day's got a little special place for the NBA, too. There's been some pretty great games that have occurred on Memorial Day regarding the conference finals, and we're in the thick of the conference finals right now, even though I don't know if we're going to be in there for very long. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
So, Memorial Day, underrated holiday?
Well, of course. You know, you pay tribute to the armed forces and all the people who have served in the military who sacrificed their lives. And in terms of, like, you know, getaway with, like, you know, getting on the grill, watching movies over the weekend, if you look at the receipts, everybody goes out. Which one do you think is the better holiday, Labor Day or Memorial Day?
Memorial Day. Labor Day is the, you know, it's always a miserable, oh, got to go back to school.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, because it's September, so everyone's kind of.
Exactly. Whereas Memorial Day, oh, yeah, school's done, party time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now that we're adults, they're both meaningless.
I can't remember too many of the Memorial Day's games right off the top of my head, but I can give you two immediately, and they were back-to-back years. 98, when Reggie Miller hit the game winner over the Bulls, and then the next year when Sean Elliott hit the game winner over the Blazers. Do you remember? Which one really stands out for you the most?
I remember the Reggie Miller one, but it's just the problem with the playoffs is you have no idea what game was on what day since they're all so sporadic, and especially, you know, these conference finals, which are like 8 days apart, it seems.
Yeah, it's just the conference finals is – it's in a situation where they might put the NBA as a league in a bind because, you know, we're recording this, you know, as we get through Memorial Day, but – you know, both series are not over yet as of this recording, but the Cleveland Cavaliers have a 3-0 series lead over the Atlanta Hawks, and the Golden State Warriors after Monday might just put away the Houston Rockets. So we've never had a situation where both teams won in a sweep in the conference finals leading into the NBA finals, and the NBA scheduled it as such because they scheduled game one of the finals for June 4th. You know, we're not even out of the last – we got one more week where we're still in the month of May. So there's a good chance that we might have an eight-day layoff between the last game of the conference finals and the first game of the NBA finals.
Yeah, that's – you know, obviously you have to. You can't just – have a floating final schedule when people need to book travel plans and, you know, whatnot. But it's just this year's conference finals have just been horrible.
Did you anticipate it being so one-sided?
We kind of did, yeah.
I thought you and I were kind of on a different end of each series, but it proved us both right at the end of the day, because I thought Warriors-Rockets would be very one-sided. You thought Cavs-Hawks would be very one-sided, regardless of the injuries.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, people don't want to see Houston-Atlanta. It's just, you know, hooray they made it, but everybody's just waiting for the Cavs and Warriors in the final.
The thing also with the potential sweeps, what's the percent chance that you would give it? Both of them sweeping, like how high of a percentage do you see it?
75. I think Houston has nothing left, which they sort of showed us in game three, and that gives us a 50-50 split on Atlanta, who played their hearts out, but you know, when you're relying on Jeff Teague to play hero ball, not a good sign.
What's more impressive to you? A great game that includes great performances like Game 3 with Cavs and Hawks, even though it was a bit of a rough game at times. Al Horford's flagrant 2 from trying to give Matthew Dellavedova the people's elbow, it looked like. But what do you like more? Do you like those kind of rough games with great performances from Jeff Teague and LeBron James, or do you like a blowout win like the Golden State Warriors had, where one guy just is absolutely magnificent. Like, which one would you prefer to watch?
Oh, I prefer to watch the Hawks game 10 games out of 10, because the Hawks, not only were they playing for the series right there, first off, you know, Cleveland had no right of being, you know, it's sort of surprising considering two of their top best three guys are out, mm-hmm. and they're still beating Atlanta handily. And the fact, you know, Atlanta couldn't close them out with all these, you know, Cavalier, well, we're just going to rest Kyrie and Love's out, and, you know, they're not really playing anybody else. And you're relying on Dellavedova to do the dirty work. You know, it's not really, you should be winning easily with your, you know, we destroyed everybody in the regular season strategy.
But do you think there's a beauty to some of these games where even though the score is lopsided, one player is such a standout? Like, I'm kind of alluding to the Steph Curry performance.
I was going to say you could have Steph Curry, but then you could just have the, on the opposite, it's like, whoa, Steph Curry was great. Yeah, Houston as a team is horrible, aren't they?
Well, they hung in there in games one and two. Game three, when they lost by 35, I can't explain that.
You know, it's okay, they hung in there, but it wasn't really like, I did not feel like Houston would win either of those games. Mm-hmm. You could stay close, but, you know, at arm's length distance the entire time, which I think Golden State did. Was just like, okay, we'll keep you guys, you know, we'll keep them in it, and just be, you know, put enough pressure to make sure they don't win.
But go ahead.
I think a one-person game gets overshadowed in the playoff by overall poor play.
That's true. And the thing is, too, is that the ISO play that has pegged LeBron James throughout this postseason, because he's played with a lot of attrition from his teammates, you know, I think that's overshadowed, because kind of saying what you're saying, I think that's alluded or that's shadowed how good he has been overall as a player. If you really look at it, game three, 38 points, 18 rebounds, 13 assists, played with a hurt wrist, looked like an ankle sprain. Was that, and you've seen him up close and personal at times and on television, you know, in the Boston area, you know, where LeBron's pulled out his best performances to try to take down the Celtics. Was that LeBron's best performance?
I don't think it was his best performance, because it's up there, but it's just like when you look at him now, he's sort of more trying to will himself into it as opposed to having that natural.
I agree.
That flawless, just looked effortless in the Celtics game.
I think you said it a couple months ago, and you're right. I think he's a little past prime, just a bit. He's a little stocky. You know, I'm not saying he's fat, but he does look like he's a little overbulked. You know, and the speed is there, but it's more off the dribble. It's not as much that pure like freight train speed that he had in the early when he was in Cleveland and his earlier days in Miami. It feels like he's lost his fastball just a tad. He's not throwing 104. He's throwing like 99. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the, you know, he's now fast for a power forward as opposed to being fast for a guard.
Yeah, and his 3-point shooting has dovetailed. He can't shoot threes anymore.
And, you know, you see he's moving inside. He's doing the back to the basket. And, you know, let's not forget, in December he'll be 31. He has a lot of mileage on those legs. So think about when he gets his next contract. That thing might be pretty toxic in year 4 and 5.
Yeah, that would be in 2016 when he has the ability to opt out. And then they have the new economics in which he could reach probably up to about 25 to 30 million a year.
Yeah, so by the end of it, when he's making, you know, year, let's say four, probably make 30, maybe 38, mm-hmm. 38, 39, and he's 36 years old.
Cleveland will give him the max.
Oh, yeah. A 36-year-old LeBron with two, like, you know, knee replacements, that's going to be tough to sell. But, you know, it's one of those things, if you get a championship, all right, you have to do it. And
The only thing that scares me with LeBron, and it doesn't scare me as much with Curry, when he gets much older in a decade or, you know, about 10 years, 12 years, is that, you know, great shooting never goes away. I feel like that LeBron's jump shooting is starting to go away. You know, I thought that he was a great jump shooter in Miami, you know, mid-range and from three, and I feel like it's starting to fizzle just a tad.
Yeah, but I think it's fizzling because he's focusing on overpowering big men with
post
speed.
Play. Yeah.
Yes. Post play is now, and eventually, you know, in 3 years, he might turn himself back into a stretch four. The thing with Curry is, you know, shooters never die. Just the same thing you will see, you know, so we saw Reggie Miller and Ray Allen go forever. It's just they'll be sort of marginalized to the that specialist role.
You know, I've been battling forever to try to figure out what Steph Curry is, kind of like comparison wise, like player to player. Because you know, for us as normal human beings, we look at a player that existed before, and we take another one and we just try to meld them together and try to find the best comparisons as we can. Scouts do it all the time when they're scouting college players for the NBA draft. When it comes to Steph Curry, I just want you to hear this out and see if you kind of you're on board with this. I feel like he's a combination of Pete Maravich and Reggie Miller. He's got the marksmanship of a Reggie where he can make a shot anywhere on the court, but he's got the dribbling and ball handling skills and court vision of a Pistol Pete.
That was funny. I was going to be like, that's horrible. He's like Pete Maravich. And I'm like, well, you just, well, okay, now I agree with you. It takes all the thunder out of it. Like, no, I'm going to have the Maravich reference. You're not, like, you're okay. Going to pick somebody crazy. Like,
okay, he's a ball handling Reggie Miller.
No way, man. You're crazy. He's just like Maravich.
Do you have anything kind of like slightly different that you've thought of, like watching?
No, that's exactly how I, you know, he's Maravich with a little more refined shot, which, okay, there's your Reggie Miller. Bam. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's that's who he is.
I've got one for the beard, if you want to hear it. He's a more refined version of Allen Iverson.
Oh, I don't.
He doesn't take as many shots, though.
That's the thing, is Iverson was just a one-man wrecking crew.
Oh, God, he would take 30 to 40 shots in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, Harden doesn't do that. And, you know, it's Iverson, I don't think you can make a comparison to Iverson only because of his size. You can't say, well, he's a taller Iverson, because Iverson did things.
That's what made him what he was, yeah.
Yeah.
Being a little guy, you know.
And if, you know, if Iverson were 6'2", 6'4", you know, we wouldn't be hearing, you know, we wouldn't be, he'd be a different player. He wouldn't have all what he had.
James Harden, we just referenced him. He's been great. He was pretty great in the beginning of the conference finals in the Western Conference. He was great in the previous rounds. I thought he personally almost got him into game two. I think people are kind of, overdoing it with criticizing Harden for the last play when he kind of dribbled into a trap. It just happens. You know, I thought he was great in that game. Without him, the Rockets would be probably nothing. But he was the guy that helped lead the Rockets to their deficits, overcoming their deficit, to say it the better way, from 3-1 against the Los Angeles Clippers. You are a guy, Adam Murray, that does not like to use the label choke. You think that it's overused, specifically by me, and that it's something that is not, that's more specific to every situation. But when it comes to the LA Clippers in their second round series against the Rockets, Adam Murray, was that a choke job?
That was a full-fledged choke. And, like, you know, we were talking about the, you know, the game seven. It's like, well, who do you got? I'm like, I really don't know. I think LA's done. They officially just exploded, and then they couldn't pick up the pieces. They just choked it away. And, like, it was just, you know.
But
what's
the anatomy of a 3-1 choke? I mean, they don't happen often. You know, you said it's only happened 9 or 10 times throughout history in the NBA. But in other sports, we've seen it. You know, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, we've seen them before. But we're really speaking to basketball. What is the anatomy of a 3-1, you know, collapse?
Well, there's not really – you can't really call it – there isn't one. Because 3-1, all right, you lose a game. It's 3-2. Nobody thinks anything of it. Mm-hmm. Nobody goes, well, this is a turning point. They're officially done. It's the game six where if you come out flat in game six, all right, you're sort of in trouble for game seven. Because it's like, all right, you know, you let one go.
Yeah, because we've seen a few of those. I'll give you a few examples. Sonics Rockets in 97. The Rockets were up 3-1. Sonics took 2 in a row, and then but then the Rockets won game 7. The Blazers, everyone remembers the Blazers in 2000 when they played the Lakers. Everybody remembers that they were up 15 in game 7. What they don't remember is that they were down 3-1 in that series. If the Lakers had lost that game, it would have been a collapse by the Lakers. And there was the Mavericks and the Spurs in 2006. The Spurs went from being down 3-1 to going to a game 7 that went to overtime. That the Mavericks won, and then the Clippers and the Grizzlies. And actually, it was the Clippers that were up 3-1. They lost 2 in a row to the Grizzlies, and they won in Memphis in Game 7 to save their hide. You know, so it's not like it's never happened before. It's just that the team that's trailing coming back is just – it doesn't happen a lot.
It doesn't happen because, again, you know, like, let's just go back to this season. Milwaukee, Chicago, 0-3-1. They won game 5. And then it's just, okay, we'll just destroy them game 6. And even, the game goes to game 7. They're back, you know, 3-1. But nobody thinks about it because the games were still close. Mm-hmm. You know, they're competitive. It was just the way, you know,
That's how it felt when the Rockets played the Suns in 95. All those games were close. You know, and so yes, they were down 3-1 and came back. I was like, that's not a shock, you know.
So you don't think of it as, oh, my God, they blew it and there's a big comeback. It's just like, oh, they lost close games and, yeah. Oh, it's a game 7. And you're like, oh, you're going to game 7 mode. It's just not like, wow, what just happened there?
Yeah, I think you have a point. They're not all created equal. Like in 2006 with the Phoenix Suns, when they were down 3-1 to the Lakers, the Suns were way better than the Lakers. What happened is Kobe Bryant hit a game-winning shot in a game where the Suns felt like they got screwed by the referees. And then they won the next 3 games, even though they had to go to overtime in game 6 to push it to a 7th game back in Phoenix. But in the game 7 in Phoenix, I remember the Suns just destroyed the Lakers. I'm trying to remember the one. Oh, it was in 97 with the Knicks and the Heat. But that one's easy to figure out because in game 5 Charlie Ward and P.J. Brown got into a fight, and it incited a bench-clearing brawl, and all the best players for the Knicks got suspended because there was a newly instituted rule that if you get off of the bench, then you're suspended automatically for the next game. So the Knicks were missing like 3 of their best players in Game 6, which the Heat won, and then they won Game 7 at home.
Yeah, so like I said, each one is...
They all different, but you know what may have made the Rockets Clippers one stand out so much more is that the Rockets looked so bad in the first 4 games. It was like, how did this happen? You know?
Yeah, it was just that's why it's just that the team looks so bad. It has to be the team that collapsed. But okay, just to say how they're not they're rare, but who really cares so much? Think back to last year or 2 years ago with Chicago-Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Chicago was first round. Chicago was up 3-1.
Yeah, that was 2013 in the first round.
Yeah, well, they went to win that triple overtime game. Brooklyn came back to make it 7. You don't talk about nobody references that.
Yeah, the Nets came out flat in game 7.
Yeah, because this was just one of those, well – you don't build up the 3-1 collapse because it was just like, and they sort of fall by the wayside. It's just, you needed a really epic one like this to be like, okay, this one really does set the bar.
Yeah. Do you think that was the worst one out of the one? And there's some other ones like, the Celtics came back, from a 3-1 deficit against a great Philadelphia 76ers team in 1981. And then the Pistons did it against the Magic. I'll tell you this. In 2003, when the Pistons did that against the Magic, I just knew Tracy McGrady was going to find a way to lose that series. So when he went to the papers and said, I've never been to the second round before, after they won game 4, I said, you just screwed yourself, buddy. Because I just knew. I was like, man, the Pistons aren't great, but they're better than the Magic. And if they win 2 in a row and they go back to game 7 in Detroit, T-Mac's got a lot of crow to eat. And that's exactly what happened.
Yep.
So they're all different. They all have their unique identities, but they all share the same. They all share the same numbers at the end. You were up 3-1, and you lost. You know, and at the end of the day, you're going to be sharing the same list, regardless of how you got there or how you won those first 3. You know, got those first 3 wins. So because they don't always go the same order. You know, we've only seen one time where a team, or actually twice, where a team was down 3-0 and came back and pushed it to a 7th game. It happened in 2003 with the Blazers when they played the Mavericks, and it happened in, I believe, in 1994 when the Nuggets played the Jazz. Do you think this is even close to possible in either of these 2 series? that we're playing right now?
No.
That's it? That's all?
This is... I am so ready.
I'm trying to look for hope here so that we can...
I can't find hope with... You have, you know, on one side of the ball, you have Tamari Carroll and Korver injured or out. And
broken ankle. Out 4 to 6 months with surgery.
You know, and then Houston, you know, like you referenced like a few minutes ago with Harden. He drove into a trap. Well, yeah, that's what happens when you play hero ball. Mm-hmm. If you don't drop a play and you run right into a trap, well, you have nothing. Because you were just expected to hold the ball for 10 seconds.
Is Matthew Dellavedova a dirty player?
No.
You don't think diving is, you know, when you're close to the lower extremities, you don't think that's a violation of player code?
No, it's the playoffs.
Playoffs.
It's what are you supposed to? This isn't women's field hockey where foul, you touch somebody. It's no, you're there to win, and if
but you don't think it's one of those situations where the same guy is doing the same thing over, like you know how Rondo used to always poke a guy's ribs when he goes up for a jump shot, or I'm trying to think of a couple other, you know, Kevin Garnett with the elbows. You know, it just seems like some people kind of find their way. Walk into the same situation over and over again. And it feels like with Dellavedova, it's happened 2 or 3 times now.
Yeah, but look back to like the 80s basketball where it looked like a hockey rink where everybody's falling down, getting punched. Everybody's diving for every ball. Mm-hmm. It's just called, you know, some people are going all out.
Well, let me give you a wrestling comparison. You know, we were in an era during the Attitude Era where – everything was like crazy with the weapons and the violence and the blood and the tables and all that. And then around the late 2000s, they brought it back to PG. You know, no blood, no hits, no chairs to the head. You know, they started to really kind of streamline it. And I think it kind of helped out that product. And when I say product, I mean WWE, is that when they do the really violent stuff, it actually shines more because it doesn't happen as often. So when you see something really violent, it really sticks out. Do you feel like we've gotten to that point with the NBA, like in the last 10 or maybe 12 years, where when Al Horford tries to elbow a guy in the head, it's like, oh my God, look what he tried to do. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, that happened all the time.
Well, yeah, 10 years ago, it happened every play. But now also, we got to the point where people are getting fined for flopping.
Mm-hmm. Including Steph Curry.
Yeah, that's my point is... You're trying to, you know, finesse everything in. It's just like, no, it's – you don't see hard play anymore. It's not like if you ever watch hockey, playoffs, every time the playoffs come, they're just going all out. And you see, like, checking in the boards you haven't seen in hard-style play. You don't see that in the NBA because it's like, well, I don't want to get fined. Or
that clean up the game initiative by the league after the Artest melee, too. I think that was a big part of it, too.
Yeah, it was a big part of the league, but – you know, throw an elbow in a hard play, you know, the people's elbow, that was sort of like excessive. But, you know, Kevin Garnett, oh, he'd throw his elbows, getting for a rebound. I'm like, yeah, that's what used to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's you expect hard style play. You don't expect.
Well,
you know,
let me give you just a few random acts, you know, over the years that we've seen. Okay. When Andrew Bynum did the clothesline to JJ Barea, uncalled for or okay? Like, by your standards, regardless of the rules. What do you think about that one? I'll just give you a few random.
Uncalled for
that one. Okay. I'm trying to think of a few others. How about the elbows to the chest when you're trying to dig in? Or maybe a ball grab.
Well, ball grabs are never okay. nobody would condone that. But elbows, like, if you ever just sit and watch – you know, for me, half the fascinating part is like watching not on the ball play. You'll see elbows every play.
What about blowing in a guy's ear?
Strange.
Waving a towel to try to distract the free throw shooter.
That's useless.
But I'm not talking about the fans. The fans use the thunder sticks. I'm talking about the players. You know how the players like to wave the towel? Like they throw the towel in the air right before he releases it on the sideline.
Yeah, or when they're taking a corner three, they all get up and go, ah!
Yeah. Or
that's very schoolyard.
How about when the players walk the moment he releases it, you know, to try to throw him off? Don't you notice that a lot of defensive players at the box do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is clearly they're trying to throw him off, especially if it's bad. Like every time Tristan Thompson takes a free throw, the opposing team always does that at the box. The moment he lets it go, they start walking. like they're pretending to switch.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's just a clear, like, trying to create motion to avert your eyes so that, you know, something bad happens.
Just, yeah, just disrupt it. But, you know, like, that's that stuff is just either commonplace or just schoolyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do it for so long, you don't even think about it half the time.
Let's talk about coaching carousel, because we're not there yet. There's only been one official hire that's been made. That was Billy Donovan with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't think I got your thoughts on that one.
I don't think it's we might have. I don't know, but maybe 5 years too late for him, because what has he done since that run with Hartford and Noah? And
he had a great team in 2014 that only lost two games, but they lost to UConn in the Final Four. It wasn't a really talented team. He's had talented players go through there since, guys like Nick Calathes and Bradley Beal, and I'm trying to think of another one that came through there. They've had a couple of good players, you know, that have played under Billy Donovan. He's done well with Team USA for the under-19 and the under-18 teams. But in terms of, like, college, outside of the – after the winning national titles, he's never even come close to that yet.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he's put a few people out, like, you know, who, Eric Murphy and
– yeah.
You know, it's like he hasn't – he sort of just sort of rested on those laurels. Like, we're content to be the number two team to Kansas.
Yeah.
I mean, to Kentucky.
And I think his time was up at Florida because he felt like the SEC was strengthening and that Florida wasn't really getting the momentum back that they had had. You know, Kentucky was dominating again. And, you know, you got Rick Barnes at Tennessee. You've got Bruce Pearl at Auburn. Alabama just hired Avery Johnson. I don't know how that's going to work out. But, you know, I think he noticed that the SEC was strengthening and that his talent pool was shrinking. And he said, okay, time to take my chances.
You know, why not? Why not go to a team, you know, of course go to a team that already has two players who won't listen to a coach anyways and just call their own plays.
Yeah, they always leave after, like, the hotness on their resume is kind of cool. Like, Chris Peterson did that at Boise State, the football coach. Like, everyone wanted him for about 3 or 4 years. He said no constantly. And then it was after about two years past prime for the Boise State program that Chris Peterson said, okay, I'll go to Washington now. You know, and I feel like that's what happened with Billy Donovan.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're going to, that's probably one of the more currently attractive spots.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say for future rankings it's not an attractive spot because, you know, good luck keeping that team together.
But do you think that might work out in Oklahoma City? Because he does run a lot of pro style. He is a very level-headed guy. He's not a screamer. He's not a yeller. And players do respect him. Do you think that will go away a long ways in Oklahoma City? Because this might be a one-year thing where he might be in the spotlight, you know, depending on what happens in 2016 with Oklahoma City.
Well, of course. He'll just defer to his stars and – you know, they should be easily back in the playoffs next year. So it's sort of like an autopilot job, sort of like Blatt had this year.
You think they're trying to catch lightning in a bottle like Golden State did with Steve Kerr? Try to reshuffle the coaching seats to see if one kind of sparks fire into the team?
No, because the team was already almost there. I don't think they would have been much worse with Mark Jackson. Although he might have become a distraction with the ownership, I don't know. But the team, largely, I wouldn't say is of Kerr's creation.
So that spot's been filled, but one spot over here that has yet to be filled and is kind of turning to like the premier spot, only because of the fact that Anthony Davis is so young and he's so good already that coaches are kind of salivating to get their hands on him, because if they're able to put the right system in place, they might go far in the Western Conference with this team, and that's the New Orleans Pelicans. There's been rumors everywhere. Jeff Van Gundy is interested. They interviewed Alvin Gentry, who's an assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors. He coached the Phoenix Suns previously. Tom Thibodeau, we don't know what's going on in Chicago. We'll talk about that in a second. I heard a rumor about Kenny Atkinson, who is an assistant coach with the Atlanta Hawks. What is your prediction for the next head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans?
Oh, they get Van Gundy. That's sort of a steal.
Why? He hasn't coached in 8 years.
So, if you have – I think the way the coaching has gone today, if you star power, more so than ever is overriding coaching. So you could just ride your one superstar player.
Jeff Van Gundy's a great defensive coach. He always was. The thing that's underrated about Jeff Van Gundy is that in Houston, his team actually took more threes than any team in the league outside of the Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors his last season there. So the idea that Jeff Van Gundy is gonna do what Memphis does with Dave Jaeger, where they just pound it inside and they never take threes and they play slow, that's not necessarily true. So I'm kind of interested, if they go that route, what Jeff Van Gundy would do with the analytics side of things, how much he would embrace it, and how far he could go with it. But you think that's a good fit?
I think it's a good fit because, you know, you can't – it's not like he's one of these retread coaches. It's not really his fault. You know, Houston was sort of a cursed team with, you know, Yao Ming getting injured all the time and
T-Mac.
And T-Mac being T-Mac, and then, you know, he overachieved with Steve Francis and Coutinho Mobley in the backcourt.
Oh,
so.
My God, yeah.
And, you know, the Knicks teams, you look at those Knicks rosters, they were good, but they were never like...
I was about to correct myself. They were not terribly talented, but they played well all the time.
Exactly. You wouldn't be like, that's a 50-win team right there. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, they're good, I can see them, but... You know, his teams have always overachieved for him, and it's always taken 8 years off. But, you know, how much coaching is really done these days, especially if you get good assistant coaches around you? Because that's the catchy thing now, is assistant coaches, it looks like.
Well, that's the thing. The other thing is, well, you know, if Van Gundy goes in there, what kind of a staff do you surround him with? Like, Kerr got Alvin Gentry and Ron Adams, who's one of the best defensive coaches in the league. He had coached under Thibodeau in Chicago, and he's a veteran. I mean, having those two really, really helped out Steve Kerr with getting that Warriors team to where they are now. I'm not sure about the Hawks coaching staff. I know Quinn Snyder was an assistant there before he went to Utah, and Quinn Snyder did a really good job at Utah this year. So maybe there's a little bit of there's something in the water there in Atlanta. So Kenny Atkinson's chances to get one of these jobs is not – It's not impossible. I think that he will get interviews. I think the Gentry thing is real. It was proven by the interview that they had with him. I just don't know if they're going to wait that long past the finals to hire him. You know, so that's the one tricky part of that. Whereas with Van Gundy, they could probably announce it in about 2 or 3 days, and then Van Gundy finishes off his ABC duties, and then he's finished.
Yeah.
What about the Orlando Magic? This is looking kind of like the redheaded step, like they're looking like the third wheel among the Pelicans and probably the Chicago Bulls if they let go of Tom Thibodeau or if they deal him, which is very likely. Who do they wind up with?
Well, it's not looking like Chicago will deal Thibodeau. It just looks like, because nobody wants to pay that price anymore.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was going to say. They're holding out for a deal. They thought the Pelicans would do it, but now the Pelicans are throwing kind of flyers out to other people. So now I think Chicago's in a situation where they're going to if they don't want him and if Thibodeau's unhappy, they're going to have to fire him.
Yeah, they're going to fire him, but they're going to fire him after.
Yeah, but you can't do it after the draft or free agency. Like, you could do it after the draft, but not after free agency. Because no one's going to want to play for Chicago with no coaching set. No,
it'll be like the Jason Kidd thing where they announce a new coach and then fire the first, you know, mm-hmm. where it's too late for what's his name?
Larry Drew?
For him to do anything.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. But, man, that would be media-wise, that would really paint Chicago's ownership and management in a bad light. But then again, I think they're already in that.
They're already in that bad light for letting Thibodeau thing go for so long. There's no, mm-hmm. you know, there's no reason for it to be that way. So if they're already going, we're holding out for a draft pick for you, you know, it's.
So do you think if this happens, what do you see with the Magic? You see Thibodeau here? Do you see Scotty Brooks, who has a relationship with John Hennigan, the GM in Orlando? Like, what do you see there in Orlando? And what do you think kind of style play would work there with the personnel in hand?
Well, right now, the name I thought was Scott Skiles.
Okay.
He was the one I thought was the most interesting. The problem with Orlando, they're not the redheaded stepchild. It's just – wow, this team looks good. Oh wait, you mean New Orleans is open? When did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Orlando still looks good.
They're the last
city. You know, more better teams kept coming along, and even it's just like, hey, Orlando looks pretty good. Yeah, but Denver looks like they have more talent.
Denver is toxic, especially with those players after they got Brian Shaw fired. I don't know if anyone's going to want to go there. That's one where Melvin Hunt, the interim coach, might actually have a chance to get the head coaching job.
Well, that's why you hear no noise from that front. But it's just like, you know, in theory, it's like, well, if you move one bad egg out of the, if you move the bad egg out, mm-hmm. you know, in Lawson, maybe the team might, you know, come back together. And
I think the Bulls, if they really make the move, I think that's Fred Hoiberg's job. I think there's just too much smoke to that fire. Like, there's got to be something there if it's been talked about for this long.
Would he be really better? Not really.
Well, he would push the three-point shooting and the up-tempo, and I think that's what the Chicago owners want. What's that?
You want the up-tempo, but how are you going to do that with Gasol and Noah on the floor?
Well, you trade Noah.
Yeah, that's going to go over well with the fans.
I don't know. There's all these people that are saying, well, this guy was hurt. You know, Tony Parker was hurt, but he didn't say so. And, you know, Kyrie Irving's got tendonitis. And, you know, I'm sure all these guys get banged up when you get to the playoffs in a postseason with more injuries than I could allow to even think of right now. But Joakim Noah seemed injured to me. It looked like he was playing hurt the entire time.
It did, but
I don't know if he was hurt, but it just seemed like either he has reached his peak and he's going downward as a center, which I don't believe.
He was either hurt or just disinterested with the addition of Gasol.
That's possible.
But, you know, we're getting away from Orlando. Mm-hmm. It's just this team would be better with, you know, if you just give not a retread coach there.
Well, would you consider Mike Malone a retread coach? He sort of got shafted in Sacramento.
He kind of did. Well, that's Sacramento also, that completely.
Yeah, but they have coach of George Karl. They made their decision.
Yeah, they have their coach of George Karl, but it's just like, I don't know. Just it's one of the, could he just be one of those lifetime assistant coaches?
He could, you know, I think he was the assistant under Mark Jackson, and that's when he got the job in Sacramento.
Yeah. Assistant in the war before that assistant in the war and the Hornets.
Yeah. And the
before
Cleveland
that
Cavaliers.
Cavs before yeah. that, the Knicks.
Yeah.
And it's just like that's your first coaching job. He didn't really mold that team. You need somebody to come in and make the definition of that team and be like, we're going to now be this. We're going to now be that.
But he is intense. Like, he had those interviews where he would call out his team. And I feel like Orlando needs a kick in the ass. You know, maybe that would be something that they would invite. You know, because it's not like Orlando is close to the playoffs. But I don't think they're that far away. Like, I don't think they're one of the three or four worst teams.
Well, the problem is they're closer than we think, because now with Tobias Harris, if they re-sign him, okay, now you're starting to commit money. You know Oladipo's going to get a max deal.
Alfred Payton is probably going to wind up being good down the road.
Payton's getting, you know, you just paid Vujicic. Mm-hmm. You know, people are starting to get the money. The same thing happened to Utah was, okay, now you're
committing.
You can't be that, you know, $20 million under the cap team anymore and still be as horrible as you are. Mm-hmm. So would a guy, you know, who might scare this young team away? So, you know, would that be the best of things? I don't know.
Fragility of a team's like mindset, I think that's one of the last things I would worry about in Orlando's situation right now.
But I don't see them as a tough team. That's the thing, is I see them as a very fragile team. They sort of might need to be,
yeah,
a little more coddled than, like, you know, Sacramento with big things like, I don't care.
Yeah, but you gain toughness by losing and then figuring out how to win, through trial and error.
But are you going to get that by calling your players out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need, like, one of those, like, Brad Stevens sort of, like, guru type.
Everyone needs a Brad Stevens. I mean, I know you hate giving the Celtics credit for anything because you're a self-hating Boston Celtics fan. But Brad Stevens was a coup hire.
Oh, it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even, you know, well, it was a coup hire now, but...
It was then. I thought it was a smart hire then.
Yeah,
I thought
but it was last risky. It was definitely risky. Last year was just like, well, what did he do? It was just, you know, he had no definition. It was like, okay, he was just learning what to do. Mm-hmm. Now I got it. You know, don't be too quick to, you know, have a, you know, snap judgment. But no, he was a coup hire. I'm saying they need a young person to grow with the team. Jacques Vaughn just was like, I don't know how to develop players.
Jacques Vaughn was a summer league coach for the Spurs. That's what he was. I'm telling you, that's what he was.
Yeah, and that's it's like, seems to be, you know, hey, are any of these guys any good to make our team? No, not really. Okay.
Chances Alvin Gentry gets a head coaching job. Give me like a percent chance. 90? I think he winds up with one of these jobs, whether it be Orlando, Chicago, or New Orleans.
I could say, you could say, yeah, a good 80 to 90. He might just be like, all right, I'll take Denver.
What about Thibodeau? Fuck it.
He'll still have a job.
But where? Where does he go?
I don't think Chicago gets rid of him. I don't think the owners are going to be like, well, we're going to pay you good money to go away.
So you see status quo.
Well, look how long it took for them to get rid of Boozer. People were telling them to amnesty him and, hey, you can really improve your team. We don't want to dump good money and dump good money and dump good money. You know, the ownership, for being as big as they are, they're not really big spenders. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to pay Thibs.
First year where they really doled out the money in the offseason this past summer.
Exactly. And you're going to now give Jimmy Butler tons of money. You're going to now be like, okay, here's $7 million for Thibodeau to go away. Mm-hmm. I just don't, based on history, they might just do the scumbag move and be like, okay, everybody's hired. Okay, now you're fired. But I still think they're just too cheap to do that.
You think Scotty Brooks takes a year off?
Yeah, it'd be best for him.
Now, Monty Williams is already out of the mix. I've already heard that he's about to be hired as an assistant under Billy Donovan. So he's out.
Smart decision.
Yeah.
Get ex-head coaches. You know, it's good for what's his name take a year off to because there'll be more marquee jobs next year.
Yeah. And I mean, look, we just had an NBA season where for a good 2 month stretch, one of the head coaches was Tyrone Corbin, one of the worst coaches in NBA history, one of the worst head coaches I've ever seen. You know, it's not impossible. And Melvin Hunt, I'm not saying Melvin Hunt's a terrible coach. It's just, is Melvin Hunt a head coach in the NBA? Is he head coach material? You know, I say no.
Yeah, probably not, but it's just, you know, we could have said the same thing about Jason Kidd last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did. You didn't.
And then look what he did in Milwaukee. But it's just like, you know, we'll get to that, obviously, for next year previews, who's on the hot seat. But, you know, let's just say one team starts off slow. Let's say Phoenix starts off slow. Mm-hmm. You know, that seat could get very hot very fast. So it'd be in his best interest to take a year off.
I'll give you two jobs that might – one of them, like, they've been eliminated for a while. But I still feel like there's some simmering there, and that's Toronto. Do you see that job opening up this summer?
No, because they've kept him too long.
Okay, so he has a.
You should have got rid of Dwayne Casey immediately because of all the other premier job openings. This is like the first year where, like, how many years have you seen really good teams that have openings?
That's a good. That's a really good question. Like
with Oklahoma City
Well, in 2013 when the Clippers job opened up, that was a pristine job. Doc Rivers begged Boston to let him go there.
Yeah. Okay, that was just one. I'm saying there are multiple, and you could even say, you know, Sacramento's on the verge of being a playoff team, and
There was a 2010 when Chicago's job opened up, but I'm trying to remember if there was another one that opened up at the same exact time that was just as good. They had Larry Drew taking over for Mike Woodson in Atlanta, and Atlanta was still good, but that's the only one that kind of comes to mind immediately.
So, you know, if you're now putting your name in the hat kind of late where, you know, you've lost, you know, even, let's say Skiles gets taken and Jeremy gets taken. Who, you know, now you're left to the same retread coaches who bounce around every, you know, another 3 years of mediocrity and he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be, you know, they should have put their feelers out earlier.
I'll give you one more. The Cleveland Cavaliers.
He's fine.
You think David Blatt is safe?
He's safe. Why wouldn't he be safe? Because LeBron calls the plays? We all knew that would happen to begin with.
So you think that was just a bunch of hot takes? Like when all that Eric Spoelstra stuff happened after the 2011 finals when they lost?
Yeah. They're not gonna get rid of him. Get rid of him now. Mm-hmm. Not as, you know. I just don't see them with all this. If you have, you know, the player who's already in control and everybody's happy with it and there's no underlying tension or they're undermining me or how do I get in touch with them? You know, if Blatt's willing to defer control to his team and just be like, okay, I'll be the assistant coach to you guys. Yeah. Sort of like what Popovich is. Popovich is more of an assistant coach than a regular coach.
Yeah, he's more of a mentor. He's almost like...
Yeah, because he's like, look, if you need me, I'll be here. Otherwise, you guys know what plays to run. You guys know best.
Yeah.
And Blatt seems to be the same way. Not, you know, due to his mentor, just seems to be through just sheer luck with the team.
It's looking like David Blatt, a first-year coach, and Steve Kerr, a first-year coach, are going to be meeting up in the NBA Finals. I believe that's the first time that will have ever happened in the NBA Finals. But the thing that's... The thing that's interesting about that is that it's hard to say, you know. What defines, like, you know, coaching experience at this point? Because so many coaches have never really spent that much time as a head coach in the same place. Some of them have coached in different places and been assistants for a long time. For Blatt and Kerr, it's weird because they've never been assistants. You know, and here they are in the NBA Finals. Do you think that just speaks more to the superstar portion of the NBA and how that works and how that takes you to the promised land?
Yes and no. Yes, it does. But at the same time, you know, oh, they're two first-time head coaches. Because back in the day, the only way you can become a head coach is if you were a long-time assistant coach. Mm-hmm. It would be unheard of to be like, oh, he's completely fresh. He got a job. But, you know, Blatt's been a head coach in the EuroLeague since
the
2003,
yeah, it's
maybe?
Been,
you know.
Since he got out of Princeton, yeah.
You know, so he's been coaching professional players since then. Kerr is the only one who's sort of the fresh face.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's weird with him because he was such, like, he was kind of like a coach's player in Chicago and San Antonio, and then he was a GM for the Phoenix Suns where, it, you know, Alvin Gentry was basically, you know, his sire, you know, and he coached, and the way that the Phoenix Sun played was sort of an extension of what Steve Kerr wanted. So you can almost give as much credit to Kerr for the way that team played as Alvin Gentry, who's his assistant coach at Golden State now. So maybe he does have more experience with handling a team than just looking at the resume and say, first year as head coach.
Yeah, you could say, you know, but that's the thing. First year head coach, who do they pair him with? You know, Gentry, who long time, you know, he's a coach, been
around the block.
Yeah, so you have that player to lean on. You know, there are other assistant coaches. Who was it? Ron Adams has been
who played with the Lakers.
Yeah, you have a variety of players. It's not just the same, here's my coaches, here's
and,
this,
and look
here's
at David
that.
Blatt with Tyronn Lue. You know Tyronn Lue because he was his assistant under Doc Rivers forever, you know. And
exactly, so you have that player, that young, you know, just out of the league, one, you know, a couple years, players can still relate to him. Walton Lue, you have that old school coach to lean on. And it's not just you and your – it's not just you out there by yourself anymore is what
yeah.
I'm trying to say.
Well, and also the coaching fraternity when it comes to winning a championship, it's very select. There's really not many. And we're guaranteed to have a new one at this point. You know, Kevin McHale's chances and the other one, Mike Budenholzer's chances, very, very unlikely. So it'll either be Kerr or Blatt. I'm trying to just kind of rack my brain of the ones since, like, you know, the mid-80s. You got, like, Casey Jones, Pat Riley, Chuck Daly – Phil Jackson, Rudy Tomjanovich, Greg Popovich. Larry Brown won one in 2004, right? When the Pistons beat the Lakers. Raleigh won another one in 06 with the Heat, so that just added to his trophy case. Doc Rivers won one in 08 with the Celtics. Rick Carlisle won one with the Mavericks. So what does that say that we have this new addition in this season where it felt like there were more teams in the running than we had in previous years? It didn't feel like a four-team race or a two-team race this season to me.
The thing. It's just, you know, you can't say these coaches won all these titles. It was just, you had Kobe and Shaq. Okay, you're now gulping up all these titles. Okay, you had Duncan. You're gulping up all these titles. Mm-hmm. You know, it's...
Do you think those kinds of that variety that you see in the finals that speaks to parity, do you think you can look at the final number or the final stage of a season, and if it's two different teams or teams that you're not used to seeing in the finals, you could say, this is a sign that the league is changing and that more teams have a chance in the open market to win titles? Or do you think that's sort of an outlier?
No, because it comes down to really, I think, parity. And you can try to buy your championship, but you've seen good teams don't let their players get away. So the best, you know, look at who's been the most active team, we'll say in 5 years, with buying players. I would have to give the nod to New Orleans.
In the last few years, you mean?
Yeah. And look at the players they're getting. You're not getting a LeBron. You're not getting – it's like, well, all we could do is get an Eric Gordon. Hope he turns into that superstar. Mm-hmm. We get that Tyreek. Hope he turns the next, you know, page. And yeah. Same with Drew Holiday. But just one quick step back. Going back to Cleveland's bench. Longtime assistant Jim Boylan on the bench. Head coach Larry Drew.
Yeah, now is he the one that coached in San Antonio last year, or did he coach in Indiana last year?
Boylan,
yeah.
Milwaukee.
Okay, he was the interim head coach in Milwaukee.
He was interim in Milwaukee.
When Skiles was fired. Okay.
And then 1 year in Chicago. Okay. You know, he has experience. Larry Drew, you know, Atlanta, Milwaukee, you know, and then let's get the young people. James Posey, Damon Jones is...
Both have won... Well, I don't know about Damon Jones, but James Posey's won two championships.
Yeah, and then, like we said, Tyronn Lue. Mm-hmm. So you got this variety of – it's just not – it's not the – no, he has not won a title. But you got the – I'm covering all different bases. All because I'm a young coach.
It's a mix of guys that know LeBron and then guys that can teach LeBron. Like, look at who one of the key assistants is in San Antonio now, with all those assistants that have gone on to different places like Budenholzer and Brett Brown. It's Ime Udoka. And I remember Ime Udoka as a player under Popovich. Now he's like one of the smartest assistant coaches in the league.
Yeah, he's there. He's bounced around. Boston. This is a coach. Is Walter McCarty.
Yeah, and Mika Shrewsbury, who went with Brad Stevens from Butler. You know, he's a very analytical type of coach.
Yeah. So it's changing now, where you're getting players who now still know the current players and be like, you could sort of reel them in. So you don't need that head coach to player in action. You now have sort of he's a buffer. He's your liaison because he's young enough to still get it and, you know, still be there on the – he could get on the floor as that 12th man in practice.
What staff do you prefer? The one where they can kind of all touch bases, or like one has an offensive coordinator per se and a defensive coordinator? Because that's kind of what we have in Golden State with Gentry on the offensive side and Ron Adams on the defensive side. Phil Jackson kind of did too, with Tex Winter on offense and Jim Clemens and Bill Cartwright on defense. Like, do you think that – which one would you prefer, though? Would you prefer the way that Cleveland has it, where everybody kind of has their hands in the cookie jar, or one where you do this, you do that?
Well, it's changed. It used to be you have to have your offensive and defensive guy. Now it's just sort of, let's all get people who we, you know, want to be here together, and let's be all hands in the pot, like you said.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's definitely changed from that rigid system to, you know, now let's just sort of get a group therapy type thing.
Group therapy. I think Doc Rivers is going to need group therapy after this last playoffs.
I hope he didn't bury money in other arenas like he did with the Celtics a couple years ago.
What are you talking about?
It was the regular season. He had everybody put like $100 in like the Staples Center, going, "We'll be back here."
Oh wow! I did not know that.
Is
that 2008 or 2010?
It was the one that lost Game 7 in LA or
2010.
Yeah, I think it was that one. It was just like, you know we got to come back here, so let's put all our money in here. Like, I hope he didn't do that again, because that's just gonna be. That was just, it's just a rough, like, how do you, it's really just tough to, like, how do you bounce back from that? You just have to, like, look at yourself, like, what went wrong? Because it all went wrong so fast.
Well, you know how it ended for Doc in Orlando after that? They went on a huge losing streak at the start of the 2003-04 season. He got let go. I don't think that's going to happen in L.A. I think L.A.
Well, he's not going to get let go, but, you know, these are things we can worry about in our season previews.
I'm going to finish off with a very short. Well, I guess we could try to shorten it as quick as we could with a conference finals. I guess it's a game that we can play. And what I wanted to do is that, you know, ESPN and TNT always exchange rights to the conference finals for the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference year to year. The only year in which one network had the same conference finals 2 years in a row was in the beginning of the new network contract in 2003 with ESPN, and that was in 03 and 04. TNT hosted the Western Conference Finals, ESPN hosted the Eastern Conference Finals. So I just wanted to play this game, and you know, we could talk about I'll give you the details of what happened in each of those series, and you tell me which one you would probably say which network got the better end of it. I think the first 2 years are going to be easy, so let's just quick these off or get rid of these really fast. 03, Spurs beat the Mavericks in six games. That had the Steve Kerr game in game six. And in the East on ESPN, the Nets beat the Pistons in a sweep.
Yeah, game six.
Yeah, TNT, easy. 04, Lakers beat Wolves in Kevin Garnett's MVP season in six games. The sixth game was the Kareem Rush game. Do you remember that one where Kareem Rush went off with some threes? And then 04, the Pacers played the Pistons, and the Pistons eliminated them six games. That had the Tayshaun Prince block in game two. Ugly games, low scoring. That one was on ESPN. Which one would you give the credit to there?
It was the ugly games, but ESPN, I remember, carried it through because they just kept playing that block over and over, and that carried the series as...
Yeah. And that was the last one that Brad Nessler did.
A more aggressive series.
2005 is when they switched, and then they went back and forth like that going forward until now. 05 on TNT was the Eastern Conference Finals. The Miami Heat lost to the Detroit Pistons in seven games. And on ESPN in the Western Conference Finals, the Spurs beat the Suns in five games.
Yeah, I remember that as the year I stopped watching basketball because a Spurs-Pistons finale was just not watchable.
Even I've never thought that a seven-game NBA Finals would be so boring, but it was.
It was just like...
So it would be Heat Pistons in seven games by default.
Heat Pistons, yeah, because it was just like, you know, I've said it before. It's just
that
the
was
Spurs.
Not a pretty series either, to be honest with you.
I just can't watch the Spurs. They're just boring, and same with, you know, Detroit, and it was a rematch in 2006, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it?
Yes, and that was on ESPN this time. Dwayne Wade took over, and the Heat eliminated the Pistons, who were a 64-18 team under Flip Saunders, beat them in six games, and then on TNT in the Western Conference Finals, the Mavericks beat the Suns. Dirk Nowitzki, I believe, had a 50-point game in game five. Which one do you like there?
I was happy to see Dallas.
I love the second 7 seconds or less Suns. I love them. So I'll say.
Yeah, that was just like every game was like, okay, how are you not over 100 in the third quarter yet?
2007. This one's going to be easy, I believe. On ESPN in the Western Conference Finals, the Spurs beat the Jazz in five games. I don't think people even remember that the Jazz were in the Western Conference Finals. And then on TNT in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Cavs beat the Pistons in six games. LeBron had that legendary game five where he scored 47 points.
I remember that he had that one game, and that whole series was terrible.
Yes, it was.
That whole series was, you know, just, you know, I make fun of it every
time. Well, it's either that or the Spurs, buddy.
It was Neither.
Okay, neither. 2008, things start to kind of change. On ESPN, in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Boston Celtics start their run. They beat the Pistons in six games. And then on TNT in the Western Conference Finals, the Lakers, with Kobe Bryant having his MVP season, his lone MVP season, if you could believe that, beat the Spurs in five games.
Oh, no way. Spurs, Lakers, of course. Why would I? Oh, I don't want to watch the Celtics.
You know what I remember about the Lakers-Spurs series is that Lakers had two like ridiculous comebacks, one in game one and one in game five, where they were down like 19 in the third quarter and they just roared back. The Lakers, you know, when they had Powell, Kobe, Lamar Odom, that was a really, really good team. I think that's one of the more underrated teams.
Well, Pau Gasol was always underrated in L.A. Mm-hmm. Like, he never got the respect he did. And, like, I don't know. Maybe I just overvalued him, but it's just...
But were you being sarcastic, or would you go Celtics-Pistons?
Oh, Celtics-Pistons, of course.
2009, this was actually going to be close. On TNT, Eastern Conference Finals, the Magic beat the Cavaliers. LeBron was incredible, hit the game winner in game two, but the Magic were just better than the Cavaliers overall. And then on ESPN in the Western Conference Finals, the Lakers beat the Nuggets in six games.
I remember being disappointed because I wanted the Nuggets to win, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the thing I remember about that year, if I'm not, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't, like, every game super high scoring? And
the Lakers-Nuggets games were high scoring.
Like, you know, I could, wasn't the Magic in...
The Magic,
all the Magic did, well, was three.
One of the games went to overtime, and it had some pretty high scoring. The Magic were just bombing from the three-point line.
And yeah, that's why it's just like... Thank God we don't have this Detroit Pistons 78-74 crap.
Yeah, they had a great – the Magic before that had a great seven-game series with the Celtics without Kevin Garnett. And the one, and then before that one, the Celtics played the Bulls, and that was the crazy high-scoring series that went seven games, if that's what you're remembering.
Yeah, that whole – that playoffs in general is just, I think, abnormally high-scoring.
Mm-hmm. So which one would you pick in a pinch?
I remember the Nuggets one, so I'll go with that one.
I'll go Magic Cavs, because I thought LeBron's performance in throughout that series was amazing. He just couldn't beat the Magic by himself was the problem. 2010, this one might be closer than you think. On TNT in the Western Conference Finals, the Lakers beat the Suns, who were coached by Alvin Gentry, who we've been talking about throughout the episode, in six games. I remember Ron Artest had a game-winning putback in Game 5 in the right at the buzzer. And then on ESPN in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Boston Celtics beat the Magic in six games, even though the Celtics went up 3-0 to start the series.
Well, obviously it would be the Celtics.
Oh, stop it! You know which one was better. I mean, they were up 3-0.
I know which one was better. I thought the question was, which one did I enjoy more?
Well, really, our criteria here is which network got the better end. Like, I'm not talking about ratings. I'm talking about, like, enjoyability.
Well, the thing is, it's just like, if you're watching, okay, who's on tonight? Okay, there's basketball on. Let me turn on ESPN. Oh, ESPN is showing crap. Oh, must be on TNT or vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, is it on TNT? Nope, they're showing some law drama. Oh, it's on ESPN tonight. So it's not like...
But do you feel like they have different atmospheres when you watch them? Like, say you're tuning in to the Mike Breen, you know, Jeff Van Gundy stuff on ESPN with all their movie tie-in promotions and stuff. And then you watch TNT, and they have their kind of tie-ins and music videos and things, and they have Shaq.
You know, having... Shaq sort of ruined the dynamic, but having, you know, Barkley and... Kenny and what's his name?
Ernie Johnson.
Yeah, they're more entertaining than the ESPN guys. Just watching Bill Simmons, like,
well, he's gone now.
Yeah, I know, but watching him, like, why aren't you guys letting me talk? I could talk too. Like, no, you have nothing to offer. It was just, you know, obviously the TNT pregame was more entertaining, but I don't tune into sports to watch the pre and post games.
I get that, but what I'm saying is, like, which one, like, which series did you enjoy the most, and which one, and in consequence, which network got the better end of it, you know?
Oh, obviously, and that's the really Celtics one.
Yeah, the Celtics one, you would say?
I will not. you will not get me to vote against them.
I remember when Vince Carter missed free throws at the end of game two, and I said, I knew Vince Carter would do that. So that was the one part of that series I enjoyed. I said, I want Vince Carter to prove in front of everyone that he is a choker. And he was. 2011, TNT, Chicago had the best record in the league, but they lost to the Miami Heat. That was the beginning of the Big Three era. So the Heat eliminated them in five games. It was also a five-game series on ESPN in the Western Conference Finals. That was when the Mavericks beat the Thunder. Dirk Nowitzki was incredible, had a 50-point game in game one.
That was the year of the changing of the guard, finally. Mm-hmm. You have the new Big Three. You have Oklahoma City finally making the finals. Mm-hmm. Dallas, we hadn't seen for a while. And yeah. To answer your question, both went five, so it was kind of not good.
A push.
You know, both were fairly unentertaining, but it was good to see new teams in, finally.
Uh-huh. I remember the Mavericks had a crazy comeback in game four in Oklahoma City. And I remember in Miami in game four, that game went to overtime. And that was a really good competitive game, but it wasn't high scoring. So it's just more of like pick your style and which one doesn't avert your eyes as much is the one that you're going to choose. So if you like the offense, go with Mavs Thunder. If you like kind of intense, like physical basketball, go with Heat Bulls, 2012, this one's hard, and I really can't choose right now as we speak. On ESPN, Eastern Conference Finals, epic seven-game series between the Heat and the Celtics. It was the end of Boston's Big Three. It was the ascension of Miami's Big Three in the East. And then in the Western Conference Finals on TNT, the Oklahoma City Thunder took down the Spurs, who had the best record in the NBA, or the second-best record in the NBA behind Chicago. The Thunder had a great Game 5 beating San Antonio. That's what turned the whole thing around. Where would you go with that one? They were both great series.
Well, even though the Celtics lost, that was still a great series because both teams just, it was every game was like a game seven.
Well, that was kind of what I was alluding to with like the performances and which ones you prefer. Which ones is more enjoyable to you? Like when LeBron absolutely destroyed the Celtics in game six, or a game more like he had against the Hawks in game three just this past weekend where he's great, but he has to do all these things and the game is competitive?
Well, I'll put it this way. By just evading your question, that seemed to be the last bad blood game in the finals. I think
the Pacers to Heat was close. Like those teams,
was it? But those teams, it wasn't. They hate each other, but it was just not to that level of
Boston's hatred.
Boston and Miami was an old school '80s brawl.
Like when Ray Allen went to the Miami Heat. I mean, Kevin Garnett hated Ray Allen.
Where it was just like the Spurs, like the Pacers and the Heat was just like, oh, it was, okay, we're in the playoffs, but it didn't seem like it didn't have the intensity. It was like down a notch. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's sort of the end of like what we had seen in the past, that Heat Celtics series in 2012?
Well, we would have seen that again, I think, with the Clippers Warriors.
Yeah.
And
Doc Rivers and Chris Paul had to blow it. So that's your pick, though. Celtics. I'll defer to you and say the same. 2013. This one's easy. ESPN Western Conference Finals. Spurs beat Grizzlies in a sweep. Lionel Hollins got fired shortly thereafter. And on the TNT side of things was the Eastern Conference Finals. The Heat played the Indiana Pacers. It went seven games, even though Game Seven was a laugher. Which one would you go with?
Oh, it was obviously the Heat by default.
So you don't think that was as intense as Heat Bulls or Heat Celtics?
No, it wasn't. They were just close competitive games.
Yeah, the Heat and the Bulls hated each other too.
The Heat and the Bulls and the Wizards. But just like the Pacers were just like, and plus Memphis didn't even show up for the finals.
2014. This one might be close. ESPN had the Eastern Conference Finals, and that was the Miami Heat and the Indiana Pacers. This time, the Pacers lost in six games. Game six was not even close. The games were not high scoring because the Pacers and the Heat were both like top five defenses. Western Conference Finals win six games. The Spurs beat the Thunder in six in the Western Conference side. And I remember the first five games were utter blowouts until game six, which went to overtime and the Spurs won.
Yeah, that was where both series weren't really. Indiana had just, you know, they were out of gas. Mm-hmm. It wasn't they didn't blow it. They just didn't have anything left in the tank. But both series were pretty bad. You can't have a, you know, a game saving, you know, a season saving game six to try to make a, you know, didn't. First five games are horrible. You can't have one game to save it.
Well, I don't agree. Like, I think one great game can save a series. Like, I would pick Cavs Pistons in 07 because that great game five. Like, that would be my criteria. If I'm comparing it to another series where all the games were kind of nameless, like, I would probably go that way. I mean, maybe you're of a different opinion there. But it's good to have that kind of difference in, like, criteria because there is some credence to the way you're thinking about it. You know, that you need to have a good series overall in order to be considered good. You can't just have one great game.
It's like, you know, the NCAA tournament. You can't just say, please skip the first 39 minutes and 30 seconds because the last 30 seconds you might get some crazy buzzer beaters.
Or like Hawks Wizards in the second round.
Okay. Yeah. Where just every game was.
Look at all those Bulls series in the late 90s. I mean, do you have any idea how bad the basketball was?
It was bad.
You know, Bulls Jazz. I mean, it's incredibly intense. Okay, in 97 and 98, great teams, but the basketball sucks. Like
the basketball sucked, and you're like, well, you know, that's the difference. You have two highly competitive teams. But they didn't have that animosity towards each other that, you know, the Boston-Miami had. You didn't have that. You had that missing fire. It was just like, okay, we're competitive. We're going to play extra hard. This is it. But it was just no going to the end.
Okay, so that's going to probably wrap up this one. So, you know, we were able to kind of wrap up the conference finals. We're not going to talk about the 2015 one because I think we would say neither. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Probably tune in and we'll be talking about the NBA Finals, the 2015 version. You're going to get the whole scope of things. We're going to look at everything. We're not going to misstep anything there. So everybody enjoy the remainder of the playoffs until we have our 1 week layoff and we all forget that there's still basketball left to be played. Goodbye.